You're listening to FMGRadio.com. Welcome to Generation Reinvention, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Future, with your host, Brent Green.
Welcome back to Generation Reinvention. You may have watched AMC's Emmy Award-winning series, Mad Men, and wondered, who were those people, really? Bill Birnbach was born 6 months after my late father in 1911. He founded the international advertising agency Doyle, Dane, and Birnbach the same year I was born in 1949. Birnbach, with the help of a handful of other inspirational leaders, sparked the creative revolution in advertising in the 1960s and 1970s. For any college student aspiring to become a great advertising creative, Birnbach was one of their inspirations. He served as the creative engine behind the eponymous agency, more casually referred to as DDB or Doyle Dane, helping Billings increase from $1 million to more than $40 million by the time he retired. DDB grew up to become the 11th largest advertising agency in America by 1976. Birnbach's prominent campaigns included We Try Harder for Avis, Mikey for Life Cereal, and his most notable campaign for Volkswagen, which included ads such as Think Small and Lemon. Some of you may remember those ads. I think those ads actually helped convince my father to give me a 1968 Volkswagen Beetle after I graduated from high school. The AMC program Mad Men, which centers on the fictional ad agency of Sterling Cooper in the early 1960s, has referenced DDB as its daunted and feared competitor. Today, my guests are two of Birnbach's former employees who have just launched a new advertising agency with two other partners called Senior Creative People. Don Blauweiss began his career as a graphic designer, achieving international recognition for his package designs. When he came to the advertising department of Doyle Dane, he worked on legendary campaigns for Volkswagen, Coffee of Columbia, Lufthansa, Uniroyal, and Avis. DDB sent Don to Dusseldorf as a creative group head. He also worked as a creative director for Ogilvy & Mather on the Mercedes-Benz account, for Benton & Bowles on Procter & Gamble and General Foods, and for Saatchi on P&G and Tylenol. Chuck Schroeder also started his career in the advertising business at Doyle Dane Birnbach as a copywriter working on Alka-Seltzer, Volkswagen, Polaroid, Mobil, American Airlines, Stroh's Beer, and I'm sure many other accounts. He then worked for McCann Erickson as a senior copywriter on the Miller brands, primarily Miller Lite. And by the way, that was the most successful brand launch in beer history. He also worked on Coca-Cola, New York Racing Association, Del Monte Foods, and the KFC chain, which was called back then Kentucky Fried Chicken. Chuck established Schroeder Advertising in 1978, and his agency has worked for the New York Times Stock Exchange, Fiduciary Trust International, the British Tourist Board, American Airlines, and Japan Airlines. Clearly, you get the picture that these are incredibly experienced gentlemen who have worked at the highest levels of the advertising field, so it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome them to Generation Reinvention.
Hi, Brent.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hello, Chuck Schroeder here.
Good. And I would be appreciated if you might mention your name as you answer a couple of questions until all of us get used to which voice it goes with which person. So let me begin this way. Mad Men has obviously become a cultural and media phenomenon. I assume the series showcases some of the truthful aspects of working in the business in the 60s and 70s. Other aspects are probably imaginary. I'm sure they are, using much dramatic license. So, Chuck, could you lead us off in this series? What is true and what isn't about actually working in an agency back in the 60s and 70s?
Well, as far as Sterling Cooper, we'll call them, the fictional agency that Mad Men is focused and centered on, I don't see a great many things in that story that would be unbelievable to me. I knew people who worked in the business. Doyle Dane Burnback was not the same agency, the same kind of agency that Sterling Cooper was, in fact, quite far from it. But the goings-on, as any goings-on in any big company, involve politics, office romances, drunkenness, celebration, across the board. So I don't, short answer is, I think it's probably pretty much right on the money.
The only thing that was a little unusual for me, now I spent the entire 60s at Doyle Dane. I got there in 59 and left there in 70 until I went back in the 80s. But having a bar in everyone's office was a little unusual from my perspective. I never saw that at Doyle Dane. That doesn't mean it didn't exist at other agencies.
Hmm.
However, you know, certainly the two or three martini lunch were prevalent.
Yes, I'm sure of that. In fact, that goes across many industries. Well, what about the blue clouds of cigarette smokes? Was that a pretty prevalent habit throughout the agency?
That was very prevalent, as a matter of fact, yes. It always seemed to me that the copywriters, you know, and don't forget, at Doyle Dane, the big difference between Doyle Dane and the fictitious agency and all the other agencies, for that matter, was that Bill Burnback put art directors and copywriters together. It always seemed to me that the copywriters were smoking more. For me, it was an irritation. But, yeah, there was a lot of smoking going on.
Yeah, and that obviously was true for business in general, because I used to be a cigarette smoker, and I'm a very strong activist against it today for all the reasons we now know. But I remember working in my own offices in the advertising industry in Colorado, and that was just very typical where people were smoking. That was even into the early 80s. So there is a sense of good realism from the guys that were actually there at that time in Sterling Cooper, if people really want to understand what the business was like in its, I guess, the beginning of the creative revolution. In
well, don't forget, Sterling Cooper also had the Lucky Strike business, if you remember.
Right.
In that story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes, and Chuck Schroeder here again. If you worked on a certain piece of business, it was certainly encouraged that you use the products. And the fact of the matter is, when you worked on a piece of business, and at Doyle Dane, direction that we got and the philosophy that we got from Mr. Burnback was that we should be telling the truth about everything that we, every account and every piece of business that we worked on. So when you're sitting at a typewriter or a drawing board or producing advertising and trying to focus on the truth all the time, eventually you're going to sell yourself. So I worked on Coca-Cola, and here, 40 years later, I won't touch anything but Coca-Cola. Isn't that strange?
So.
I drove a Volkswagen as you did, Brent, and so we sold ourselves. And you could call it brainwashing. You could call it belief. You could call it the good of seeing something worthwhile in a product that we were trying to introduce to somebody else. But there it goes.
And I bought my first Volkswagen right after I started at Doyle Dane. However, I must say, in all fairness, that nobody said, you know, you really should go and do that. I bought it because I believe the advertising.
Right. So did the Green family. Well, Don Blaweis, not to be confused with Don Draper, what was it really like to work at DDB during the halcyon years of advertising's creative revolution?
Well, I used to describe it as a fun way to make a fairly lucrative living. Although I can't say, in my first couple of years there that it was such a big lucrative thing. It was more the excitement and thrill of being in the mecca of advertising. As a matter of fact, I felt a little bit guilty in those early years because those were the years that, as an art director, we were using magic markers, and I felt, you know, gee, I'm here using magic markers and getting paid for this. It's really fun. it was a kind of atmosphere where everybody's door was open. You know, it was not secretive in any way. There was a tremendous sense of camaraderie. There's a tremendous sense of being part of something that was new and exciting. And running into, you know, somebody's office and saying, hey, look what we've done. Or somebody coming into your office and saying, you know, what do you think about this? So there was a tremendous amount of cross-pollination and just great chemistry.
Well, but I think also the thing that that has to be certainly made clear is that working at that company at that time was a privilege. It was the best job to have in the advertising business, and a lot of people who worked in the 60s would concede that the place, the agency that invented creative advertising was Doyle Dane Birnbeck. So we were at the originator of that whole concept. And having jobs that, by the way, were, I was told by someone at the time, that getting a job at Doyle Dane was more difficult than getting into Harvard. Creative people, especially, and most certainly creative people, would submit their portfolios or their books of their work, and I would go past the copy chief's office, Leon Meadow, at the time, and see these portfolios just stacked up like cordwood along the walls outside his office. And how we ever got the time to look at them all, I don't know, but that was a fair indication that everybody, all those creative people in New York and around the world, were trying to get a job at Doyle Dane.
My entrance at Doyle Dane was sort of a kind of a happy accident. I thought of myself in those years more as I was studying fine art and thought of myself as a painter, although I was very into graphic design, and I was studying at Cooper Union at the time, had a classmate who suggested that I come and meet his boss. I was aware of the advertising of Doyle Dane Birnbeck, but I didn't know about Doyle Dane Birnbeck. I went up there and was off, showed my portfolio, and the person who looked at it said, you know, would you be interested in working here? Fortunately, at the time, I didn't know that people were leaving important parts of their body in order to get in there. I just said, sure, I'll try it. And, you know, 11 years later, I was still there. So,
what that speaks to me, because I do have my background in advertising, we were doing, you know, marker comps even in the early 80s before really the computer design really took off, is that you had to be an extraordinary illustrator in many ways and a very effective designer of full visual images, not just roughed out very very cursory sketches. Would you agree? Didn't that distinguish?
You're right. Drawing was an important thing, you know, and being an artist at that time, and for a long time after that, like you said, right up into the 80s, frankly, in the 80s when I was still at, you know, at Saatchi and, you know, doing storyboards. At that point, I wasn't doing so much my own. I would have, you know, a sketch person doing them for me. But still, drawing was a very important part of it.
Yes.
That said, however, there were art directors that I worked with who didn't draw very well at all. But the whole idea of concept, the whole idea of the idea, which is the approach that was pounded into us at Doyle Dane Birnbeck, was that it wasn't that necessary that you had to do a beautiful sketch of something. The idea was that you had to have the idea. And the people you worked for, the supervisors, when you showed them, when they were showed a rough sketch of something, they could see, these people could see the idea in the rough sketch. And that got approval. Hey, let's go out and shoot this thing. That's a great ad. Go out and shoot it.
Well, usually for presentation purposes, we would have them. We would have a bullpen of sketchmen.
Yes,
but yeah,
sketch guys.
Basically, it was all about ideas. Chuck is making a really good point there that Doyle Dane was about ideas. Concept was key. Was absolutely key to our life there.
Right,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, absolutely, that is one of the keystones, as I've learned in my preparation for this show. And I'm going to take a quick break, but I want to come back, and for our younger members of our listening audience, tie what these gentlemen do and did to its relevance today because of some of the lacking in the core issue of the concept or idea, as Don and Chuck were just addressing. So come back. We're going to talk a lot about DDB and the relevance of what these gentlemen practiced and learned to maybe a revolution in advertising that will be forthcoming because they are now focused on products and clients that need the kind of work they can do. So stick around. We will be right back.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Bill Birnbach was a personal hero of mine when I was studying advertising back in the 70s. And he insisted that great advertising is driven by great imagery, integration of words and pictures. So, Don and Chuck, how did the collaborative team concept, which was originated by DDB, involving bringing art directors together with copywriters, how did that really work for you?
Well, as far as I was concerned, it gave me the opportunity to sit with a peer, someone who was perhaps more visually oriented than I was, but someone who could contribute both visual and verbal to a concept, and bounce ideas. It seemed that the sitting by yourself, as authors do, as many painters do, didn't really work as well with advertising, at least Doyle Dane's brand of advertising. If you had somebody that it really became your friend very quickly because you were thrown into the pit together to create something, you had the opportunity to have their thoughts and their reactions to what was on your mind and vice versa. And it really helped strengthen the idea because that relationship was very much, nah, I don't like that idea. Or, no, let's go in a different direction. Or, you know, that's a great idea, but suppose we do this. So the exchange and the catalyst was very important in that relationship.
Okay.
I think there was also another sort of subtle aspect, psychological aspect, particularly, you know, speaking as an art director. Don't forget, prior to Doyle Dane Birnbach, art directors were looked at as a pair of hands. So the way it worked was the account guy would come back from the client. Usually the account guy, you know, was the more powerful figure in the group. He would talk to the copywriter about what the client wanted. The copywriter would create something and then slip it under the door of the art director, who would maybe there was even a little sketch attached, and the art director would simply be making a layout. So you were losing a really significant aspect of creativity to the entire formula. So from an art director's point of view, we were significantly elevated psychologically, and I think that played a significant role in terms of the confidence and the participation that Chuck was talking about in terms of the overall chemistry and the resultant creativity.
You know, I so fully embrace what you're saying. In my world, which is to talk about the future of business and boomers and aging, as I go around and make presentations and so forth, I've seen, and let me put it in the vernacular, that the suits are often the most sought after in terms of their reiterating data. Data this, data that, data. And I recognize the importance of data so you can understand trends and current thinking on a consumer group. But I also recognize the power of the intuitive insight. So much of the great advertising and the most successful advertising in modern history is based on the power of an idea that came from someplace else besides just a formulaic reaction to data. And I don't know if you would agree with that or not, but that's the experience I've had.
Totally agree. Was Bill Birnbach who said, really, in contradiction to David Ogilvie, who felt that there was a formula that could be applied to the creative side of advertising and to getting the message across. And Bill Birnbach said, I warn you against making advertising into a science. It's not. And that, to your point, Brent, is what the other element, the other direction is all about. It's about seeing things as a visual person, an art director, seeing things as a verbal person, a writer who might write his own poetry or his own prose, and having that ability to translate a sales message into a kind of communication with a potential consumer that's very unique, much in the way that a lot of painting is unique and prose is unique.
Let me ask Don this. I also quote Bill Birnbach, and let me let you hear this and then react to it, Don, if you will.
Sure.
Birnbach said, all of us who professionally use the mass media are the shapers of society. We can vulgarize that society, we can brutalize it, or we can help lift it onto a higher level, unquote. So, Don, do you believe that some of the prominent advertising we're seeing today is degenerated into what might be called gratuitous violence and slapstick nonsense, and thus less effective, perhaps, in positioning brands and products?
Yeah, it's a little difficult to generalize too much because, you know, there are so many different things going on. But yeah, I think everybody feels today that, you know, the general attitude or the general results of that being produced in advertising today are on just a totally different level than, you know, the creative 60s and 70s. I think somewhere something has gotten lost. Perhaps it has to do with the fact that, you know, there doesn't seem to be a training ground. When I started in the business, there was something called a bullpen, and you worked there, you know, cutting and pasting, and you had the opportunity to observe those people who, you know, were more experienced in the business. And then, as I said at Doyle Dane, a lot of it had to do with kind of free flow back and forth and being able to, you know, to be able to associate directly, not only with Bill, but with people like, you know, Helmut Krohn and Bob Gage, who were giants in the business and were free to very free about sharing, you know, their ideas and were an inspiration. I don't know that that really exists anymore, partly because of the change in technology. You know, there's no longer the same kind of bullpen. There isn't the same kind of training ground, and we're producing perhaps a different kind of people. Chuck?
Yeah, I would agree that, and the other kind of overarching influence here is the society. We've become a much more chest-pounding, in-your-face kind of society, I think. You see it in sports. You see it in television, in movies, politics were always kind of a mudsling, you know. People aren't shooting each other anymore. That's a blessing. Yeah. But the Doyle Dane Birnbach, and we keep going back to our origins because that's where we learned our business and the business that we're in. Doyle Dane invented the soft sell. There was no soft sell before Doyle Dane. And that was just based on communication that was a friendly conversation with a consumer. And it wasn't abusive. It wasn't a put down. It wasn't one group trying to make their case by subjugating or humiliating another group. It was a friendly conversation with the end result hopefully being somebody would buy a Volkswagen or fly American Airlines or rent an Avis car.
But in every case, they were making a salient point and almost invariably with humor.
Yes.
Right. And Chuck, you shared with me a comment that I, you know, made note of, and that you said, I quote, you actually can attract more bees you can attract more bees with vinegar than with honey is kind of an absurd proposition. What were your thoughts in communicating that to me?
Well, I think that we go back to the whole idea of being civil to people. to being friendly, to talking with a sense of humor, to poking a little humor at yourself. When Volkswagen ads ran, the first Volkswagen ads ran, the people at the Sterling Coopers of the world looked at that and said, what are these people thinking? Mm-hmm. They're calling their own product ugly. They're calling it a bug. They're making fun of it. What could they possibly be thinking? And this comes from a philosophy of advertising that says you've got to put a big spotlight on the product, you've got to surround it with beautiful girls, and you have to claim to the world that you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, I guess especially if you're selling sliced bread. But that was a radical change in the way advertising was done, and that influence came from Bill Birnbach directly.
Okay.
And that was done at a time when we were saying, think small. There were, you know, American cars were actually literally, the photographs were literally being stretched to make them look even bigger.
Lots of chrome and so forth. Well,
yeah, lots of chrome, yeah.
Don Birnbach also said, and I quote, "I fear all the sins we may commit in the name of creativity. I fear that we may be entering an age of phonies." So what are your thoughts about that reflection by Birnbach? Have we been in an age of phonies in some areas in the advertising industry?
Well, I suppose you can always make that claim. I mean, certainly while we were doing what we were doing, there were other people, you know, doing things that we didn't believe in as Doyle Dane Birnbach. And Bill was very, you know, an extremely ethical guy. Most of the time, he wouldn't take on a cigarette account once it became,
yeah, because of the Surgeon General's report in 1964. Yeah. He said, we're not going to take any cigarette business. And there was millions, right, hundreds of millions of dollars in cigarette business.
I think that's terrific that he took that stand, because obviously those of us who have studied the history of cigarette advertising know that back in the 60s, about half of all men smoked. 50%, and the advertising was almost like, you know, health claims were suggested.
yes.
You know, I mean,
well, they were, yeah. More doctors smoked Chesterfield than any other cigarette.
Or Cools, because it was good for a cold.
Right.
Yeah.
I believe I bought a couple of packs under that assumption. We have time to talk about one more item, because one of your partners in Senior Creative People was a part of this Daisy Girl ad for President Johnson. And it was one ad run one time, and it's often attributed to being the final factor that gave Johnson the presidency. And could you talk about that briefly? Because we are in a political year. It's a highly charged political year. And we know that probably one of the candidates is going to be propelled by an ad that might be forthcoming that will say to everybody, this is why this guy's got to be elected.
Well, Chuck, shall I jump in there?
Yeah, by all means.
I think that, you know, the most critical thing about that ad was that it just transformed the entire, you know, all of political advertising right down to today. You see what's going on in terms of, you know, what's happening in this primary. It's, you know, very powerful, and that completely changed everything. Before that they were kind of like talking heads. Some of them weren't even using commercials. They were using their speeches, you know, and taking 15 minutes or half an hour. They were dull and boring. And this made it, this used the style and technique that was being used in advertising, from a very creative point of view. It created, it became an icon.
And it was strictly and entirely based on Mr. Goldwater's own speeches and his own recorded comments about his philosophy. It was not fabricated or taken out of context in any way, and that was the scrupulous truth that was that the direction dictated from Bill Birnbach himself, that we're not going to lie about this. We're going to take we're going to ground this work in the actual comments made by the candidate, And that there was a very strict line that Sid Meier's, who was the art director, and Stan Lee, who was the copywriter, followed under that direction.
For the benefit of our listeners, I would encourage you, because this is a great ad, one of the 10 that you would want to look at in terms of the history of modern advertising, certainly television advertising. It basically shows a little girl picking a daisy and in a very cute way, counting down as she's picking each petal. That segues, after she picks off the last petal on the daisy, that segues to the a thermonuclear weapon being discharged, and President
starting
Johnson
with the countdown
being,
there. Yeah,
starting. That's right. The countdown restarted to the nuclear weapon, and it's shocking. It's powerful. It's memorable, and you have to, of course, put it in its time when there was a lot of fear in the U.S. about a Russian invasion and nuclear war with the Soviet Union. So.
If I could, Brent, I would just add one thing back into that, the whole idea of being honest and not being phony. Jerry Delafamina, who's probably the most quoted advertising exec because he just happens to be a very interesting guy and a terrific writer, both advertising and books and so on and so forth. He said one of his quotes that we really liked was, "Doyle Dane is as close as you can get to what people really are and what people really think." So that was a competitor who said that. He had his own agency and worked for other companies. So he's right on the money. That's exactly right. What Doyle Dane was.
Exactly. And I also think that's a perfect quote to take our next break and segue into senior creative people, an agency that Don and Chuck have just started with two partners, the goal of which is to create the type of advertising that is where people really are. And in this case, those of us who have probably moved beyond 50 and 60 age-wise. So stick around. We will be right back to talk about senior creative people.
Be sure to join us at fmguniversity.com, where we can turn your passion into business within 30 days, put some fun back into your life, and show you how to make money and do good for yourself and others. That's why we're called FMG, Fun, Money, Good. Get started today. Visit us at fmguniversity.com.
Don Blaweis and Chuck Schroeder have had long and storied careers in a tough, tough business, rife with stress, and I can speak to that from personal experience. So I'm curious. I know that you've not left the business behind, and that was an assumption that I had probably made a mistake in thinking, because maybe there was this interlude where you're kind of having an encore career. So, but I do want to know why you would return to what I would consider to be the typical pressures and deadlines and often difficult clients that come with a full-service advertising business. Why would you do that?
Just Chuck's
well,
here, so.
I think, yeah, the first thing I would say is that we're... I'll step up and take the hit for that. We're not a full-service agency.
Okay.
You make a good point, Brent. If we throw ourselves back into the agency business, that would be someplace we would want to be, really. What we are is a creative consultancy. So we don't place media. We don't conduct in-house our own research. A lot of our research comes from our experience, which is not bad research to have. But we wanted to stay away from all of the staffing requirements and pressures, as you well put it, that come with all of the details that go into running a full-service shop. The origin for the idea was the first invitation that came for the Doyle Dane Birnbach Creative Group, 60s Creative Group reunion in June at the new DDB's offices on Madison Avenue. And when that invitation came in, I had it for a day or two, and I was thrilled with it. I thought it was a great idea. But the more I looked at it, the more I said, won't it be great to be together with these people who had such a huge influence on my life and whose lives were influenced so much by being at this amazing place in the 1960s. And the more I thought about it, the more nostalgic and maybe even a little weepy I got over the whole thing. And so I called Don, who I've known for many years, and we talked about it. And we went into that reunion with the intent that we were going to pull some people aside and talk about putting together a group of our team from the 60s.
Okay. Don, let me take that.
Yeah, I was just going to add that at the time of the reunion, I happened to be visiting, I was in Belgium for a wedding. And I actually left my wife there for a week, gave up a week in Belgium for a three-week party at Doyle Dane because I thought it would be such a historic moment. And, you know, I also felt obviously, you know, very, very strongly, you know, this is where I grew up. This is where I really learned the business and was not going to miss this this reunion. And the other thing that was, you know, been to many agency reunions, and they're usually the whole agency. This was unique because it was limited only to the creatives, art directors and copywriters, that is, and only those art directors and copywriters from the 1960s, which was, of course, the period of the creative revolution. So it was an extremely special event. And, you know, as I said, you know, Chuck was inspired by this thing to come up with this idea. We've been in touch over the years all the time and, you know, laid it on me, and then we brought in a couple of more people, and here we are.
Okay. Don, did Mad Men have any influence on your decision to create the new agency? I have to ask. Was there any, if that hadn't been out there, do you think maybe this would have gone as far as a discussion?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. I mean, Mad Men is a nice adjunct to what we're doing, and you know, it's fun for me because Mad Men is about advertising the 60s. You know, I was there. I watch with a very keen eye everything that Matthew Weiner has put together, and it's impeccable production. And I look at it, you know, both from, you know, the professional point of view as a filmmaker in terms of his production techniques and things like that, but I also look at it as a witness, you know, of the period. And everything is really, you know, quite meticulous. As I said, the only thing that was a little unusual to me was, you know, the bars in the office. But frankly, being at Doyle Dane during that entire period, I don't know what it was like because we were different from every other agency. So maybe there were bars.
Okay.
But I don't think that you know, Mad Men itself would have made it, you know, it's just been a nice adjunct.
Right. In actually naming your firm, which is online at Senior Creative People, obviously that idea can be taken a couple of ways, one of which I had not thought of until I did some of the background research on what you've created. And it was the idea that when there was a very important client and a very big problem to solve, it might be said within an ad agency like DDB, get the senior creative people involved. So there's a kind of a double meaning in the agency. And Chuck, let me quote something you sent me. You said, our group would like to get together with clients to create branding campaigns that put the real senior story out there where everybody can see it, especially seniors. Could you elaborate on that a little bit, Chuck?
Well, you know, I'm an American and proud to be here, lucky to be here. But one of the things about my country that disturbs me is the way seniors are treated. And in some ways, in some instances, the way seniors think of themselves. Some seniors hear the word senior and they cringe. It means handicapped. It means lesser. Mm-hmm. It means old and feeble. And that's not what it should mean. There's a transition in the term from the time we start, if a start could be placed in high school. A senior in high school is the ruler of the roost. You go on to college, same thing. The seniors are the senior members of the student body, and they're to be deferred to. But then you transition, and in the agency business, you had the good fortune to have the term relive as something important and making you a person worthy of listening to. You're right. The term senior creative people was the reassurance that an agency would give to a client when there was a thorny problem, that the senior creative people would be put on it, and that meant the best. And then later in life, you come to this word that has so many thorns in it. It should not have, because seniors have this tremendous value as in a sense, living libraries. They are the repositories of tremendously valuable information that you can't find on Google. It lives in these people, and there's a story at some point, if we have time, very quickly I'll tell, but that's how I see that that whole issue of elevating the cause and the position and the perception of seniors in our society.
Yeah, Don, one of the things that I became aware of, I have a colleague in France by the name of Jean-Paul Triguer, and he has an agency that focuses on the 50-plus that he calls Senior Agency, one word compressed into Senior Agency. And he actually now has 10 offices in 10 European countries, and he wanted to also create a franchisable product, and has. I mean, you know, some of these European countries have licensed Senior Agency, and they have senior creative people working on business aimed at 50-plus. But then we talked about it. Jean-Paul came over to the U.S., and we talked about the possibility of Senior Agency in the United States, and I said, well, unfortunately, we see the word senior in the U.S. slightly different, and I think, Chuck, you were just addressing that. So do you view that as a potential stumbling block, Don, that maybe you can overcome, or is it maybe not a block that we should even be thinking about?
Well, I mean, you know, we do have the history here, and everything that Chuck just referred to is a reality, so obviously we need to counter that in some way. We're hoping that in terms of the marketing world, those people who are more sophisticated realize that, you know, the most significant thing about all of this is that last year, 2011, the first baby boomers turned seniors, turned 65. And it's just the beginning of it. Oh, sorry, again?
Maybe, was it turned 65 or 60?
I think it was 65. But, yeah, 1946 to last year was 65.
Okay.
And the point is that until, for the next 15 or 20 years, you know, we're going to have, you know, another wave, you know, turning 65 every year. So we're going to have a total of, you know, probably 60 to 70 million seniors, you know, joining the population and becoming part of our the audience. We're going to have to address that, and there's going to be a different attitude out there, you know, with suddenly all these people being seniors and being open to a message that is maybe more, you know, accommodating them.
Well, maybe I could bring up question part two. So, Don, how optimistic are you about convincing the advertising world to lay its youth obsession aside and put more efforts into actively courting the baby boomer demo and more effectively?
Well, you know, I think the youth obsession period is kind of over. I think, you know, that was the Pepsi generation. I think, you know, those people are all seniors now. The Pepsi generation have grown up, and I think that I, you know, I feel relatively optimistic about the fact that, as I say, the audience is dramatically increasing. People are much more aware, and there's a general greater awareness of things like health that goes along with aging. And people are living longer, and there's less of a stigma, I think, attached to, you know, people who are older now are much more active. I mean, you know, aside from us as an example, there are many people who are, you know, doing things, and there was an item, I forget where I saw it exactly, but, you know, 105-year-old guy, you know, and his son who was in his 60s working for him down in Wall Street. And a 105-year-old guy going into the office every day. Now that's an extraordinary example, but people are working longer for a variety of reasons. Certainly the economy is a factor, but the fact that they can, that their health, you know, is sustained, and that there are just more of them is a positive factor.
Chuck, I think the economics too, they're very difficult to ignore. Advertisers and maybe abetted by their agencies have run this message skewed young for so long that they're not noticing things like, I mean, the median age for audiences for every broadcast network has moved upward since 2006, significantly upward. And even Fox, always the youngest network targeted, they had the greatest increase in median age over the last 5 years. So if some believe that seniors are just watching television, you know, that's another blinder to put on. The fact is, if you search the web, seniors are learning how to use social media, computers, smartphones. And there we are. The smartphone manufacturers don't market to seniors. How smart is that?
Obviously, that is an area that is a huge opportunity. Now, you started Senior Creative People believing there is a void out there, and of course I agree with you. But on the other hand, I'm wondering if you've seen any advertising programs that can come to mind that you feel the creators perhaps got it right. They perhaps got a little taste of the secret sauce from DDB, the charming, heartwarming soft sell that the agency popularized. Have you seen anything out there that struck you?
One comes to mind. Mm-hmm. The Prudential.
Prudential.
It's called First Day. Mm-hmm. First Day of Retirement. It's an impeccable campaign. I wish I had done it. I love the production is really outstanding. And the message is excellent. It's really, it's a very soft sell.
Okay.
It's real. Yeah, it's very real. And, you get a strong sense that, these people's lives are really being showcased in a way that's very, very positive, and the message from Prudential is very well put forward.
Okay, and I would like to share, and for our audience benefit, obviously we don't have visual here, but I imagine if you Google Prudential and First Day of Retirement, you'll get pretty close to or you go to YouTube and Google that, or look at it, search at it, you'll find it. Another one that attracted me, and I will share a link to you if you're not familiar with it. GE Healthy Imagination launched a campaign last year that features a couple showcasing them through their romantic life, beginning, you know, obviously in the 70s and ending in present day, where they're seated together in front of a doctor, and the lifelong partner of the male is determined to, first of all, have breast cancer, but it is curable, thanks to GE technology and, you know, early diagnostics. And it's the spot is called Beautiful. And I don't know if either of you saw it, but to me it was a very effectively nuanced spot that took advantage of generational marketing, but also took advantage of the beauty of story and done very artfully. Did either of you see that spot by any chance?
I did not, no.
Okay.
I have a very vague recollection of it, and I guess it didn't stand out for me the way perhaps the Prudential campaign did. But there's a lot of terrific creative people in the business right now. Some of them are young people who are able to capture those moments, and that we don't intend to try to infer that they're not competent to do that. But what we are saying is basically the logic of the thing. Very few, if any, 35-year-olds know what it's like to be 65. If you take a writing course, any writing course, anywhere, the first thing the instructor is going to say to you is, write about what you know. The best stuff is going to come from your own experience. Well, if you're 35, you haven't been 65, so where's that going to come from? Well, it's going to come from a creative ability, a strength, perhaps, in being able to put yourself in the shoes of somebody else. But the reason we came on board with this was that we are in the shoes of those people, and we have that Doyle Dane background, which is, you know, Brent, if we hadn't been Doyle Dane people, this Senior Creative People concept never would have happened.
Sure.
Wouldn't have done it. We would just be a group of, you know, nice old fellas who were trying to get together, maybe after careers in the advertising business, to do advertising. And it was our provenance that brought us to this concept. which is not to say that other people who are older couldn't do a terrific job with senior targeted advertising, but speaking for us only personally, I never would have advanced this if I had been, and I'm not going to name an agency because I was at a couple of them, but if it hadn't been for Daldane Burnback and the revolution that started with Daldane Burnback, I wouldn't have advanced this idea.
Right, and I really do embrace what you're doing, and I'm excited about it. You know, throughout my career, one of the accounts that I worked on pretty heavily was McDonald's, and during my time there, they introduced, they went to African-American agencies to create advertising that would be more effectively targeted that segment, Latino agencies. Other parts of our business have recognized that it, you know, you get a certain edge when you have people that know the people that are being targeted. And I think this idea that it's time for a creative consultancy to come forward that can truly bring the power of the history that was Daldane to the present and reaching the individual today who is past 50 or 60 is incredibly opportunistic as well as important. So we're going to come back and we're going to wrap things up talking a bit about the future with our two guests. So stick around. We will be back in a moment.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Both of my guests today have mentored younger generations, which is also a tribute to who they are as people. Don has taught design and advertising concepts at Parsons School of Design, Pratt Institute, and Cooper Union for a total of 25 years. Chuck was an advertising instructor from 1974 to 1992 at the School of Visual Arts in New York. And one of their forming visions for senior creative people is to provide a mentoring program. So can you tell us a little bit about what your ideas are about this?
Sure. We started the mentoring program when we started to put our company together, actually. I've had a contact with a business partner for 35 or more years who was an instructor and a department head at the Alberta College of Art. Now, not many people have heard of the Alberta College of Art, but as it happens, it's a very strong graphic design and advertising school in Calgary. So I've talked to aside from talking to Don, who's got deep experience with teaching and loves it a lot, as I do, I talked to my partner and said that if we do this, we have to do it along the lines of a fairly rigorously formed academic discipline. It can't be just ideas or lectures or commentary thrown together and tossed onto a blog, if you will. It has to have credibility as far as the schools that Don taught at it and the schools that I taught at are concerned. So Rick helped us with that, and we brought along a masterclass student whose big strength was code and software, and also brought a design strength to it, and that launched the mentoring program. So that was the pilot. That's about complete now. And now we're going to go to the schools where we have relationships, Don and I and Sid Myers, our partner, and we're going to sit down with them and we're going to say, how do we do this 2012? How do we make this both a classroom and an online experience so that it has value for these young people who are really not getting the training that we got when we entered the business? It's not happening. The agencies are smaller, they're trimmed to the bone, and we hear from guys who work at the agencies that it just isn't the way it was when we were in the business. And young people are kind of thrown into the mosh pit, if you will, and it's a, more of a sink or swim type of deal.
You know, one of the things that I have predicted for the future, and we'll see if it comes true, but because of the shortcoming of a lot of our educational systems today and the ability for us to provide qualified workers for many industries, I see the rise of apprenticeships happening in a much more aggressive way across many different industries. And your point that it needs to happen in the mentoring sense of it within the advertising industry is a very apt parallel, at least to my thinking on the subject. So, Chuck,
you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Good. Thank you. And Chuck, if you achieve everything you hope to accomplish, the four of you, with senior creative people, what does your firm look like in about 5 years?
Well, it's hopefully going to look a little larger. We want to draw from not only our alumni from Doyle Dane of the 60s, but from senior creative people at other agencies. We've gotten emails and phone calls from some very senior people who ran big, big pieces of business at other agencies. And it looks to them like something that they'd love to be involved with, and we would love to have them involved because they have a tremendous value. And beyond that, we see the other side of the coin, which is these young people. And one of the great things that I think a lot of young people miss in this society is being able to talk to older folks like us, the people who have all this experience in our business and who've been down this long road that we all traveled to get here and learned a few things along the way. And again, the great thing about that for us is that we're going to learn from these. You always learn from young people. When you teach, it's a learning experience, and it's just wonderful to walk out of a – we taught in classrooms in real time. And to walk out of that class and say, boy, I learned a lot in the last 2 hours. I didn't know I thought that way about something until I expressed myself on it. And that's the value of that is huge. So it's both the young and the old getting together.
Let me ask you both, and you can jump in there, whoever feels like they want to jump in first. Is it possible to make experience and wisdom, and I think those are accepted attributes that we associate with older adults, to make that, if you will, hip and trendy? I think there's 70 million of us who are going to be over the age of 50 that believe that would be a good idea.
Well, I think you just said it. You know that there's a growing population of people who will certainly relate to that and have an understanding of it. So that that's going to become hip and trendy, if that's the right word. Those seem like such young terms.
Right.
On one hand, on the other hand, they're never out of style, really, because to be hip and trendy is just a good thing at whatever age.
Well, in some sense, it is happening. And again, maybe the language may not fit the embodiment as we're thinking of it. But I think the opposite of hip and trendy is irrelevant and marginalized.
Amen, sir. Well said. Well said.
I don't think any of us want to have that happen. So we're a big group, and we got some smart people like you two at the helm to lead us to some more creative imagery of this stage of life. And that
excites
me.
Our favorite line is success is just one of the things that never gets old. And I don't know about being hip and trendy. I sort of gave up on being cool some time ago, if I ever was. But you can be appreciated. And to your point, Brett, that's really the mission here. We have to, as a society, unlike many societies who not only respect their seniors but revere them, we have to take a fresh look at our seniors, all of us, and that includes the rest of the senior demographic, and see the value that we bring to the society.
Now, with all due respect to Chuck, if you see his picture, I don't think he's given up on looking cool anyway.
Actually, I've seen both of your pictures, and you look pretty cool to me. I got to say,
I'll send you both a check on that. All right.
That's great. Well, on this note, we're unfortunately not going to be able to continue our conversation. I'm always disappointed because an hour sounds like a lot. It never is. But I want to thank you both, Chuck and Don, for joining the show today. And
Great pleasure. Thank you, Brent.
It's an unfolding story, so I encourage our listeners to bookmark seniorcreativepeople.com and return there frequently, because obviously this is an evolving opportunity, and we're going to have some very bright people who've accomplished a lot in their careers who have really been responsible for our cultural narrative as it's unfolded over the last 40 years, and we'll be taking it forward. And this is a huge opportunity, whether you are over the age of 50 or not, because if you're under the age of 50, you have a great deal of opportunity to learn in an apprenticeship mentoring way from people who were part of the creative revolution of the 60s and 70s. So I want to thank you for joining the show, and you can send me any messages concerning the show to Twitter at Boomer Marketing. I again invite you to read my blog, take a look at it. It's 6 years in its creation process, and I get very involved in this conversation from many points of view, and I will appreciate it if you'll tell your friends, colleagues, and clients about a worldwide revolution discussed here weekly, which we call Generation Reinvention.
You've been listening to Generation Reinvention with your host, Brent Green. Visit Brent at his website at generationreinvention.com. And for archive shows, be sure to visit his show page here on the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is, have fun, make money.